Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Welcome everyone to this special episode with former Assistant Housing Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz. Now, we've been digging in on Catherine's research on Global Control 101, and today we're going to go even deeper. Catherine, it's great to have you back for part two of our deep discussion on Control 101. Now, I want to start off here with the fact that there seems to be, even now, over a year after their loss and their bid for the White House, this lingering presence of the Clintons in 2018, and on the other side hints that the Clinton machine may actually face some indictments in the future. Now, how do you see this all playing it out, and isn't it dangerous for them to be so visible, given their track record?
The problem with the Clintons is it's not that they have dirt, it's that they have an encyclopedia level of dirt.
Yes.
I mean, you know, the challenge of going after the Clintons is, you know, which situation do you want to pick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it is interesting because you're talking about decades of corruption there.
Well, here's the thing. I said this the other day. I've always believed after more and more got dished out on the Clinton Foundation during the campaign that it was the HUD money. The money that they started, when money started to go missing from HUD in fiscal 19 in the 90s,
right?
I think that was what financed the Clinton Foundation, the Blair Foundation, and Epstein's operation.
Wow, that's major.
That's my big question mark. How much of the there was an accountant who did essentially nothing but HUD business who ended up being the lead auditor for the Clinton Foundation? When I saw that, I said, uh-oh.
Right. It was a bad sign. Well, I can't help but notice the Clinton connection to the CIA version of UFO disclosure we've been seeing recently in the New York Times with Podesta being involved. What do you think of that?
Harry Reid was on my mind right when it happened because of the developments in the Bundy Ranch case. Those were very earth-shattering. Of course, Harry Reid was involved. And so I'm wondering, okay, how is this going to lead back to the Clintons? How is it going to lead back to Uranium One? How is it going to lead back to Harry Reid? Was the solar farm he was looking at going to be for one of Warren Buffett's energy companies? You know, where does this lead? Because, you know, you go back to Buffett and it bounces you right back to Clinton. So,
right.
Right. So whether it's Uranium One or Buffett, it's like, okay, where's this going? Question mark. And then all of a sudden, Harry Reid's in the New York Times for $22 million contract of UFOs. What's that about?
Yeah. Wow.
It was kind of like non sequitur. You're trying to non sequitur this someplace else.
Like Area 51.
Well, Harry Reid was the senator from Nevada. And so if you're the senator from Nevada, you're dealing with Area 51 and all this stuff all the way along.
Yes.
Right. So the black budget is such a significant part of the Nevada economy and, you know, one of the great hotspots for mortgage fraud, Las Vegas, which is always a sign you've got black budget going on. So Harry Reid's had to walk. You know, I always say we did a great series, two-part series. It was called The Deep State and Budget Politics.
Right.
And basically what I said was, look, we have one budget financing two civilizations, and one of those civilizations is secret. Now, being the senator from Nevada, Harry Reid was right smack in the middle of that. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people it's like the father who has one job but two families, and one family doesn't know about the other family. And then suddenly they discover, you know, there's another family across town.
Right.
And the financial problem is we've been financing two families out of one check.
Yeah.
So,
yes, well, that is the central issue. And with all that in mind, what should be our best way to approach this new kind of reality?
We have two choices. We're at a crossroads. We can either bring transparency to what's really going on and saying, okay, you know, why are we financing two civilizations out of one budget? And what's this other civilization and how do we integrate it? Or we can double down on Orwell. You know, we can basically go to the ultimate national security police state and basically destroy our civilization and economy trying to keep the secret.
Mm-hmm. And that's the question.
And that's the question.
Interesting.
Right, which are you going to do?
Huh. I don't like to say this, but, well, it seems like they're favoring the latter for sure.
Well, of course, what that looks like, if you've been keeping a secret, imagine being married for 30 years and having to tell your wife that you have another family across town.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Is that comfortable? I don't think so. Right. So, what was I going to tell you? Oh, what, you know, what the national security state looks like, full on Orwell. You know, you have a chip, and if you don't do what you're told, they turn off your money.
Right.
Right.
That's
which
one.
Is why cryptocurrency is at the heart of what's going on.
Well, let's take a look here at some good examples of control. Now, one of the signature accomplishments so far of the Trump administration is the tax bill that he got signed into law. Now, you know politics and you know the economy. What's going on here with his tax bill?
So what, when we talked about the election, I said that the people who won this election were the people who wanted, you know, I said we had a competition. And there are two ways to look at that competition. One was you had a competition between the people who wanted to sacrifice the United States to keep building empire and the people who are willing to sacrifice the empire to shore up the United States. Okay?
Yes.
And I believe it was primarily a group in the military and intelligence community who understood that the global empire was overstretched and the risk was too great. And what we were looking at is if we did shift to a multipolar world, if the unipolar empire didn't succeed, you know, the military ran the risk of real implosion. And I think one of the challenges facing the military is the whole central banking warfare model and the currency is way too dependent on force and way too dependent on the military. You know, there's supposed to be a soft revolution card and an economic trade and technology powerhouse to this thing, but that's been weakening as the politics and corruption get worse, and we're putting more and more dependency on the military. And I think the military is saying, wait a minute, you know, we cannot afford to bet the ranch that we pull all of this off. So I think there's an effort to reshore manufacturing and other capacity in behind the oceans, because Fortress America, that's one of our great powers, get a lot less dependent on global long-line manufacturing and transportation systems and use that as a platform to really build space and go into space in a major way. And part of that vision is real oil and gas and food self-sufficiency, because we are, you know, a major food exporter and now we've become an energy exporter. So I think you had part of that vision was between, you look at Silicon, Hollywood, New York, and D.C., people who manage abstract assets versus the people who do the oil and gas, the people who do the food, the people who do the military. So think of it as the abstract versus the concrete. And I think the concrete guy said, risk levels are too great. We've got to reground back in North America and bring the risk levels down a lot. Uh-huh. And that was the group that won. Now, I think that was a big shock, and that's a big turn, because what it's saying is, financial coup d'etat over, and now we don't need all those lawyers who are good at stealing money. We need engineers who can build real things and make it work. You know, so we don't need to spend $4 billion for Air Force One, because you don't need to spend that much to get a great plane.
Right.
So the concrete guys are back in charge, and they've got a whole different vision of what makes money and how it makes money. So if you're a real estate developer like Trump is, you don't want crime running around your building because that can destroy your equity value. You know, if you're pumping out software, you don't care, right?
Right.
So it's a very different vision of the economics. It's concrete economics versus abstract. So I think that is a very big shift. And we've been going through a process all year long where the financial coup, you know, the financial coup guys forgot that it was a temporary phase.
Mm-hmm.
The debt growth model is over. Now, what did Trump need to do? It wasn't really Trump, it was the group behind him, because it's a group. What do they need to do? The first thing they need to do is they need to be able to bring back all that money.
Right.
That's tax reform.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to be able to get it very economic for the big corporations to reshore that money, pay down their debt, and insource a lot back into the United States. You know, the other thing they needed to do was bust the union, but that's what they've been doing for 20 years. So they're in a position, and now with robotics, they don't need a lot of labor for it. Okay, so that's done. Second thing they need to do is secure the borders and get a hold of immigration and get immigration back aligned with what the law says. So you need to run an immigration system that just, you know, starts to reflect what your legal immigration system is supposed to. So they did that. Now, The third thing they need to make it economic for this to happen is they need to get control of healthcare costs, because healthcare has exploded from 7% of GNP to 17. I think it's headed towards 19, but growing.
Wow.
So tried to do that, and they've done some, but that is still a major question mark and political problem for everybody, because, you know, whether it's corporate America, insurance America, or general population America, we're all in denial about the healthcare issues. Okay, so they tried to do that, got some of that done with a repeal of the mandate. So now they've got the big pieces they need to start to really reshore. And that means two things. One is the iron fist is coming out of the velvet glove, because now you're talking about major money, major corporate interests coming back and getting a lot done fast.
Uh-huh. Okay? Yeah.
So if they need a couple hundred thousand acres to do a Silicon Valley North in California, voila, look what happens. So I think that's number one. But the second thing is they now have the biggest, most difficult pieces they need politically to get done what they want to get done, which means you don't have to be so nice about everything now that it's done, and except for the fact you have a 2018 election.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're coming into the 2018 election, and I think we are in for a fight on the ground over policy issues, because if you look at the Democrats who lost as a result of Bernie Sanders basically getting rolled by the DNC and the Democratic Party, those people decided to go start to organize at a grassroots level, and I think they will be formidable. You also have a tremendous amount of money being laundered to activists who are running around the country saying and doing the most ridiculous things. You know, but it creates a major state of incoherence. So you have that going on too. And then finally, you're starting to see in the general population, the trance come off and people realize, wait a minute, you know, the local elections, the congressional elections, all these things, you know, I've got to fight this bottom up. And so I think a lot of energy is going to go into the 2018 election, which will keep the iron fist a little bit down. Once we're through the 2018 election, Katie, bar the door. Watch out.
Wow.
It's global 3.0. We're going up the global 3.0 S-curve. And with David Rockefeller dead and the 3.0 leadership taking over, and then with the major component pieces, you know, back into insourcing, all those component pieces in place, get ready. We're going up the S curve.
What about the kind of transhumanism aspect? Is that riding up the 3.0 with us?
Well, it's interesting because the concrete guys got a hold of the executive branch. That's going to soften that somewhat, but it continues to be pushed.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that war is going to continue, and automation is really going to push it. So it's been softened, but it's still there and being pushed.
Right. So, and they're trying to get this language changed so you can't refer to someone as he or she, and they're trying to work this into schools and everything else. So, that's a transhumanism program.
This is a question that's got to be fought at the grassroots level. In other words, you've got to fight this at the local PTA. You've got to fight this at the local city hall. This is trench warfare, and this is a fundamental freedom of speech. The biggest thing I'm worried about in 2018 and 19 is the push. I call it the con.
The Constitutional Convention con.
Right. So they're going to say, oh, you know, the Constitution, it's so old, it's not updated for our young, high-tech existence, we need to redo it. And I had a great Solari report that's public, we made it public with Dr. Vera, who I think is the top constitutional scholar in the country who believes in freedom. There are plenty of constitutional scholars, but the one who's the most committed to freedom. And basically he describes why if you open this up, they can just tear it up. So all the things they want, gun control and to kill freedom of speech and, you know, I mean, it's bad enough you can't say anything negative about Israel. You probably won't be able to say the word Israel when they get finished tearing up the Constitution. So But if you look at all the things they've been trying to get one by one by one, you know, you tear up the Constitution, you can kiss property rights goodbye, you can kiss human rights goodbye, you can kiss free speech goodbye. You know, that's how you get everybody having a chip. So, you know, that's why I keep saying on all the shows I do, these are people who believe in slavery. Do not give them an opportunity to rewrite that Constitution. Now, yes, it's been eroded. It's been eroded by the law since 9/11. It's eroded every day in many ways. But right now, as long as it's the law of the land, we have hundreds of millions of people who believe in it as a covenant and who will try and follow it. You take that away, Daniel. You take it away from the formal law, and you're talking about a mess.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Then that's moving into completely out of control, because the people leading, the leadership of Global 3.0, as opposed to the leadership of Global 2.0, the people leading the tech revolution, their attitude is, if I can get away with it, it's good.
Uh-huh.
Makes me money and I can get away with it, it's good.
Right. Crime that pays?
Crime that pays is crime that stays. Now, you look at what's been going on politically, my guess is, you know, you had the tech revolution on the Clinton side, you had the concrete guys on the side, you know, Goldman Sachs, of course, is playing both sides. But so they end up in the administration. But I think these guys sort of buried the hatchet this summer and made a deal. Uh-huh. And the reality is, if you're the guys who won the election, you've got to make a deal, because you have to run the country. You have to get on about the business. Now, interestingly enough, the people who have blown this, not the grassroots activists who were on the Sanders side, the Clintonistas have completely blown this.
Yeah.
They had a chance to go back, you know, say, okay, we lost, let's make America great again, make their bones, make their deals, and go back to work. That's what the population wanted.
Uh-huh.
And Hillary Clinton has, you wonder what her problem is. She's just, she's made it really attractive. The number one problem both the Republicans and Democrats have coming into this election is, you know, the crowd wants to see the lions eat dirty politicians.
Uh-huh.
Everybody, you know, the Coliseum wants the lions to eat. You know, they want revenge. So who are they going to throw to the wolves? Well, Clinton keeps making herself up to be more and more attractive to throw to the lions.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
they can't seem to stop. It's fascinating. It's like a weird compulsion to put her out there.
Well, it's almost as though they're using 2.0 tactics and they don't understand the game has changed. So the financial war is over. And here's my question, because, you know, when everybody went to the negative after the election, instead of shifting into some kind of make America great again, except for the saying, you know, I have to say this, the Sanders activists at the grassroots level are very hardworking, productive, great people. And I think you're seeing them doing a lot of very positive things. That's not getting a lot of attention in the national press, but they're getting a lot done. So I think, you know, once the sort of national Democrats went to a very negative place, and you followed out this way, it left sort of the national political scene with no choice but to go to what I call purges. And so we started with sex purges. You know, so now we're doing the sex thing. And part of it is, if you look at the Clintons and how the impeachment played out, the real message in that whole group was sexually anything goes. I mean, you're talking about very perverted sexual habits in that group, and it sort of got worse and worse. And if you read, I was just sitting in the dentist's office reading the latest Time magazine with the, you know, when you read the stories, you think, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, no wonder I moved to Green Valley, Tennessee. Anyway, so, you know, so we're watching sex purges, and of course, people find that very entertaining. What we haven't seen is shakedown purges. And I think now that they've got tax reform and these other things, you're going to start to see shakedown purges. People who stole tremendous amounts of money made tremendous amounts of money during the financial coup. And that money didn't go to Area 51. It went into their private bank accounts. It went to their offshore bank accounts. So my question in 2018, are we going to see some purges, and some of them very public, so that they can throw some dirty politicians to the lions? Because, I mean, if you're the Democrats and the Republicans coming into this election, you know, how are you going to prove that there's real accountability in the system?
Wow.
Yeah. What would you do?
Well, I think you make a good point that this is the thing they need to do.
I don't think the body politic is going to be satisfied with Martha Stewart this time. I think they need to come up with something bigger.
That's a great point. You know, one thing.
Hear my Martha Stewart prosecution.
Yes, please, please do.
So we come into the bailouts, and there's been massive insider trading, and people are really mad. But the ones who are the most mad are the preachy women, you know. How could we let this happen? We want to, you know, and so I could just see everybody hanging out in the boardroom saying, how are we going to tell all these preachy women to shut up? And they say, I know, let's prosecute and destroy one of their heroines. It's like, okay, wow. You want us to prosecute insider trading? No problem. Let's get Martha Stewart and absolutely destroy and put her through a highly public political process and just humiliate us. Now, do you want us to keep going? We'll do another one of your heroines. You know, and suddenly all the preachy women
went. And they all went quiet.
Shut up.
It was a freak show. It was a real freak show when they grabbed her. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, I mean, so, it's pretty low-hanging fruit, too.
Well, one of my questions is, did her first attorney set her up? Because that's a no-brainer. You never fall into the obstruction of justice. You know, they tried to frame me on obstruction of justice.
Uh-huh.
But we saw it a mile away, and, you know, we just wouldn't. And then they falsified evidence. Uh-huh. So literally they falsified evidence and tried to trap us. And it was really funny because I was saved by a miracle. One of the property managers who saw them falsify the evidence was so gratified and pleased that we had cleaned up the property. It was very, you know, because they were doing like number ones and number twos on the floor.
Oh, wow.
He thought he was going to.
Seriously.
We cleaned it all up. He gave us an affidavit describing everything they'd done. It's up on my website. And in fact, I have a fabulous Solera report that's public called Coming Clean with Eunice Boston, who is a very dear friend of mine who ran the cleaning company.
Wow.
And yeah, no, they're prayer warriors. It was spiritual warfare. And so we tell the story of Coming Clean with Eunice about how Eunice and her team of spiritual warriors, you know, basically saved me from this frame. It was amazing.
Wow. It's incredible. The things you've gone through, Catherine, it's really just amazing. What a journey. But right now, you know, I really want to congratulate you because major news outlets like Forbes magazine, for example, are picking up your missing trillions story, the missing trillions from HUD and DOD. And, you know, we've also seen some mainstream articles that are taking aim at you and the story. No surprise there. But it seems like they really don't know how to handle you and all the data that you have.
No, because I'll tell you what the big thing was, the really big thing.
Yes.
Dr. Mark Skidmore, Dr. Mark Skidmore is a scholar at Michigan State University. He's a chair in state and local finance and a very serious, capable guy. He heard me talking about the $6.5 trillion missing in fiscal 2015 from DOD and thought I was in error and checked and found out I wasn't and then came to me and said, would you like some help? And I said, absolutely. At that point, we're up to about $12 trillion missing money. He and his students did a survey and discovered, they took us up to $21 trillion. And that's a magic number, Danny, because that's more than the outstanding debt of the United States.
Right.
There's more money missing than there is total debt in the United States. You know, so, but then the question was, so we published a website with all the documentation so that anybody could jump on and see it. It's missingmoney.solera.com. Well, then it got a variety of different republications, you know, the one you mentioned, and then Michigan State University, the university, came out with a press release, an article on their website talking about how their scholars had discovered this $21 trillion.
Wow.
And I, unbelievable. If you told me a major university of that prestige would do that in the heartland, because here's what you have to understand: the heartland is the place that's punching back. And for scholars in the heartland to do this, and then their university, you know, sort of honor them about it on their own website, that's when it went everywhere. Incredible. It just ricocheted.
This is unprecedented, because you've been talking about the missing trillions and the missing money since the late 90s.
Since 1999. And it was beautiful because, you know, there's something about, I'm not a scholar and I love great scholars. There's something about having a scholar and a group of graduate students go carefully, you know, because they're very conscientious, they're very careful, go through thousands of pages of documents. And it was very interesting because Skidmore is a very serious guy. He did an interview on USA Watchdog, which is fabulous. It was a way for the world to meet him and see what a great guy is. Anyway, so I said to him, look, I don't want to publish your report until we have all the Inspector General, DOD, and HUD reports up. That way, if they take the documents down, we will have links and we will not be interrupted. Now, I think he thought I was being a little bit paranoid. Uh-huh. Well, after we launch his report and the website, missingmoney.salieri.com, lo and behold, the Inspector General reports at both HUD and DOD go offline.
Oh, no.
So then he starts explaining in these other interviews that, in fact, that happened. And what happens? What happens? They put them back online in different URLs and contact us and let us know, oh, we were just reorganizing our websites. Apparently, we had miraculous reorganizations at both HUD and DOD. Now, it's interesting because the administration then comes out and announces a huge, big, new agency-wide audit at DOD. Well, Daniel, the first audits were supposed to be done in the mid-90s. We've had constant press releases all along that they were going to do an audit and they were going to finish the audit, or they're doing an audit and the audits never get completed. So the idea that this is first or new, it's like Ted Cruz put in legislation in 2015 related to what would happen if they didn't finish their audit in September 2017.
Wow.
What happened to that audit?
Right.
So the audit team in 2001 got blown up at the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. Because for several years after, the Army would say that they couldn't do financial statements because of the explosion at the Pentagon. We know the ONI team apparently was there and was blown up, but my understanding was the Army's financial office was in Ohio, so.
Yeah, right. Let's figure that out.
You know, I don't know. That was at the time where the guy running the Army, the Secretary of the Army, was a former Enron executive, so.
Yeah, wow. Now that ties a lot together. And one thing I want to mention here is that sometimes you see these kind of political social manipulations coming from less than traditional sources, like major universities, for example. What is it you're picking up here that other analysts don't see?
Because a lot of my squabble in Washington during that period was with the Harvard Corporation and Harvard Endowment.
Right.
And I've always believed that the investor who made the most money on the financial coup d'etat was Harvard. And I first came to that realization. I was sitting in the city of London making a presentation about what was going on with the financial coup in the United States. And John Laughlin and Anne Williamson were speaking. And Anne was talking about the rape of Russia. And John was talking about Eastern Europe. And I was talking about what was happening in the U.S. with some of the U.S. piratizations. And what we discovered was we were talking about Harvard. It was Harvard in Eastern Europe, Harvard in the rape of Russia, and Harvard, you know, in the HUD programs here. It was just Harvard. And we literally, we were in shock looking at each other. And anyway, but if you said to me, who's the number one investor who made money on the financial coup, I would say it was Harvard. And one of the top stories that Joseph and I talked about for News Trends and Story is the fact that Harvard is going dark.
Huh.
Remember when I said our danger this coming year is purges? Well, Harvard wants to make sure when the purges come, if they come, There's no one there to give a deposition.
All
They've
right.
laid off most of their internal staff, outsourced everything. This is for the endowment. Outsourced everything and say they're not going to publish results. And of course, results were a problem for a lot, particularly during the Clinton administration, because their performance was many more times than the market, you know?
Well, this is totally unprecedented.
For Harvard to take its endowment and the Harvard Corporation this dark and secret, you know, that's unprecedented. And that tells me the Inquisition is coming.
It's the canary in the coal mine?
Somebody's batting down the hatches. Somebody's batting down the hatches. I mean, you know, we laugh at what happened in Saudi Arabia, but you have a new young prince who decides to literally round up the billionaires and say, okay, oil revenue's over. You're sitting on billions and our coffers are empty. We need 70% of the money back because we got to rebuild the economy. Shakedown purge. You know, so you end up with a whole bevy of, now we laugh and say, okay, well, Saudi Arabia, that's Saudi Arabia. But, you know, is a shakedown purge coming in the United States?
Wow.
Looks to me like it's to make sure they're not.
Absolutely. It goes a lot deeper than anyone can imagine. Now, you did an amazing Solari report on developments in space a couple years ago that was so advanced that the headlines now are just barely catching up to it. Now, you're releasing the Space Economy report, and we're going to do a full show in depth on that in June. And you're looking at aspects that are on the record, like space mining, space tourism, suborbital platform developments, and things like that. Why space?
If you're looking at money, you know, you need to, on Wall Street, it was, even if you had very little knowledge, it was always very profitable to get there first.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So, you know, the whole idea of the Solari report is to let you know it while there's still time to do something about it.
Right.
Actionable intelligence.
Well, issues like control and space, this is something that you can use.
Right. Well, I would say it this way. There's 5 to 10% of the population that wants to know, is willing to master the topic and do something about it. There's 90% who don't want to know. So I'm always very careful. Somebody, you know, will get a new subscriber and says, oh, this is fantastic. We love this. We're going to give this to all your friends, all our friends. I said, no, stop. Not all your friends want to know this.
Yeah.
You know, so this is, you know, it's kind of like a secret society. Not everybody wants to join.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. It's a very kind of potent group.
Well, as you said, not everybody wants to put sunglasses on, right?
Right. Exactly. The importance of the Control 101 report dealing with the real issues on the ground and the new one dealing with space. For me, these are kind of like a match set because the control issues are moving into space, and we've done some major episodes together on the missing trillions. So this all fits the picture together, a larger pattern. These pieces are all related as we see a global control grid being unveiled here and being controlled by a space infrastructure. Now, how do you think an average person sees these issues?
Yeah, I said early in the report, there are two kinds of people in America, people who are mind-controlled and people who are trying to get unmind-controlled.
Right.
Because we all digest a huge amount of this stuff. You know, we're all digesting it. Yeah.
No question.
There's
a fantastic list in there, going back to your gun conversation, of countries that gave up their right to bear arms and just a few years later go down a kind of genocidal path. So.
Right.
That's one of the great lists that's in there. There's so many great stats in here, too.
And, well, I love stats. You know, I'm a stats person. But I think one of the things that most concerns me, because the gun ownership is a very important issue to me. We did a great Solari report this year on gun ownership. There are countries that have gone to gun control where we haven't ended up with genocide. So Australia is a perfect example. I spent a lot of time in Australia and going back in May. And but the thing I would stress, America is very different. In one, you have a very establishment-supported effort to market narcotics and sort of mortgage fraud and illegal activities throughout the country. So you know, the establishment is financially and the economy is financially dependent on organized crime happening in America. But the other thing is during the 90s, we saw a process whereby SWAT teams were dropped into poor neighborhoods and innocent kids rounded up and the money cut on the public defender's office and basically stuffed into private prisons where they worked to make uniforms for the military. So what you're talking about is a process that is the same process that Hitler used for slave labor camps.
Right.
You round up innocent people, you put them in slave labor camps where they work for the military, right? Mm-hmm. It's no different. Now, we made it all complicated and fancy, and you know, but if you look at the lawlessness of it, and it, you look at the extent to which tremendous numbers of people in the Washington establishment made money on it and supported it, when you have that kind of culture and ethic in a culture and you take away the right to bear arms, you're talking about a willingness to move in on the general population, which is frightening.
Oh, absolutely. And you've developed these themes for 2018 that seem to be capturing the time just perfectly. One of them that I really like is power is an inside job. Really excellent. But you spotlight the weaknesses in the ruling structure also, and why, although they think they can control this globe from a kind of space command grid, that they need to come clean on the ground if they're going to make any progress at all. So you see the government really as completely out of touch.
It's a government that is financing financing a parallel civilization, and because of that, it has to create this entire mechanism, which is completely in defiance of the law, you know, as we know it to be. So you have an establishment and an enormous financial powerhouse, which you need a tremendous number of lawyers behind attorney-client privilege running in very different ways than it's supposed to be run. You know, you have an official story and the truth, and, right. You know, you have an edifice of attorneys. And I mean, the way you manage the whole national security state is behind attorney-client privilege.
Right.
That's how you do it. Right.
Yeah. And I think that was particularly evident during the 2016 election when Hillary Clinton called half the country deplorables because they didn't think a career politician like Hillary should be stampeded into the White House by an Orwellian media structure.
You have a whole world of people who, whether their physical health, their mental health, their financial health, are being debased steadily, steadily, steadily because they're having to finance and make Hillary Clinton rich. So she's in control of the governmental mechanism and she's using it to debase them in a way that makes her rich. So if you look at why they seem, you know, not attractive or why they seem not intelligent, and you really unpack the reasons why, a lot of it is because she's draining them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm. a little bit like if I'm transfusing blood out of you into me, and because of it, you're going white, and I'm making jokes about how white you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a little bit, you don't understand that if you're going to be a parasite, you shouldn't laugh at the host. Because
mm-hmm.
that's where the food's coming from. And what it said to me is she has lost any concept of how the fundamental economics of her, you know, Hillary Clinton and her syndicate are tapeworms. And, you know, a tapeworm should not laugh at the host because ultimately the host can detoxify the tapeworm.
Absolutely, yeah.
Or you kill the host, you know, you're going to die too. I mean, that's the problem. The people who beat Hillary Clinton in the election didn't want the host to die.
Right. They weren't crazy.
Right. Because they have to keep the dollar reserve currency going, whether the host dies or not. And frankly, you know, if they have no soldiers, if they have no, you know, on and on and on, if you kill the host, their job becomes not only impossible, risky, and they can die.
Amazing. And that whole team seems to have not awoken to the fact that they lost and that's over. I mean, it is very strange the way that they're playing this after a year.
Well, but here's the problem. When you're in a financial coup and you're doing certain things because that's what works at the coup, when the coup's over, you know, it would appear they just don't know that. They don't know that certain behavior is appropriate in a world where the cost of capital is zero, but when the cost of capital goes to 20%, that behavior is not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Trump and his team are people who know that the cost of capital is much higher than zero.
Right.
And that was the shock. When he first hit the Beltway, there was shock after shock going through the body politic because everybody was operating in a culture where capital isn't real and it's free. You know, so we can afford to spend $250 million policing the transgender bathroom policy in every community in America.
Right.
You know, because the cost of capital is zero. It's free. You just print it, right?
Right, right.
Whereas the Trump team's coming in and saying, you know something? The local school board can figure it out themselves. We don't have the time or money. You know, there's not, you know, your vision of infinite complexity combined with infinite enforcement is uneconomic.
Uh-huh.
It's insane. We can't do it. But for some reason, they forgot that the financial coup was over.
Amazing. Wow, that's so impressive. The David Stockman was asked about the missing trillions that came up, and he said, oh, I wouldn't be surprised about it at all. As a matter of fact, when I was in Washington, we all knew the deep end of the swamp was the Pentagon.
David Stockman said that?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, it's funny because I never worked at DOD. I mean, I've had different interactions with DOD, and I have some pretty funny DOD stories, but I did work at HUD. And I know if you look at the state of the civil service, the top civil service was extraordinary. I've never run into the top civil service that wasn't, you know, it's a Mandarin class, and these are some of the most capable people I've ever known or worked with. Extraordinary people. That's why you take somebody like the team around Bill Binney, Kirk Wiebe, Tom Drake. People don't get to the top of the NSA on that trajectory unless they're extraordinary. These are really, it's a Mandarin class. And if you look at who those people were at HUD when I left in 1990 and the systems they had and the resources, Daniel, there is not one reason for, you know, the undocumentable adjustments at HUD should be 1% or less. In fact, they should be zero because they were that good. And the systems were that good and their resources were that good. So there is, in my opinion, from that point on, there is no reason for any meaningful undocumentable adjustments other than massive, you know, second family.
Yes.
So you're talking about major systemic fraud. The missing money. If you go to missingmoney.salary.com, the documents are there and the numbers are there. But I think in 2015, there was almost $300 billion of undocumentable adjustments. Can't be. It cannot be. It cannot be. Now, I will tell you a very interesting factoid. This is one of my favorite missing money. So Skidmore comes out with this report on September 23rd. On September 28th, we published a Salary report with him. And then a week later, because remember, after the 2015 audit, the lead payment contractor, who's doing lead information systems and payment systems from 98 to 2015, spins their IT division off into a new company that happens to have a lot of contracts on Antarctica.
Oh.
Okay. But they're out of the corporate liability. Their liability is gone.
Right.
If you look at Trump's $700 billion budget, Lockheed got 90 new F-35. It has to be at least a $10 billion order. And they're the lead contractor for space. So the Space Corps is going to be great for them. Okay, so Lockheed, crime that pays.
Yes.
Okay, but Lockheed, out of the legal liability, they've spun it out, right? But guess who hasn't spun it out? The New York Fed. The New York Fed is the depository for the U.S. government, and their member banks handle the accounts, right?
Right.
So New York Fed can't spin their information systems out to a company that does business in Antarctica. Okay. A week after we published this Larry report with Dr. Skidmore, out it comes on Twitter, and I think it was the New York Post, The Fed, the New York Fed, has had a fire. 100 fire trucks called to the New York Fed on a Saturday night. Someone was using an old fireplace at the Fed on a Saturday night.
Wow.
And it started a fire on the roof. So you wonder, what were they burning at the New York Fed on Saturday night?
Wow, that's incredible. Now that really makes you wonder that they needed to destroy this good evidence in a hurry and had to risk being that obvious.
Well, but let's get back, because what we're talking about is so big. You know, this is not a scandal. This is a fundamental change in the governance structure. And as you know, the financial coup was a change in control by financial mechanisms. If we're going to deal with this, it has to be, it's not a story. It's how are we going to fundamentally re-engineer our economy and our society? And my vote is we need to come clean, and we need to come clean in a way that leads us to a productive result. So we're on a win-lose relationship with a lot of our leadership. We need to get back into a win-win. And you can't get there, Daniel, without transparency, which is why I think what you are doing with Dark Journalists, what I'm doing with the Solari Report is so important. And it's important to do it in a way where there are no material omissions. So there's a lot of media, but no one wants to touch the really tough stories. So, and that's what you're doing, right?
Yes, absolutely. And it's like touching those train tracks that you're talking about. You know, we get in there and we realize that although difficult, we can get our hands on these facts and stories that have been intentionally obscured. And Catherine, you've led the way on this, asking who is in control and how is governance really structured? Just amazing work. The site is Solari.com. Your latest Solari report on the space economy, just incredible. We're going to cover it in depth later in June. And Control 101, the previous report, absolutely crucial information.
Right, because our governance system, our governance structure does not have the integrity we need it to have. And the question is, how can we, I think one of the problems is if you look at whoever Mr. Global is, he's managing too much risk. You know, how do we bring the risk down?
Yes, that is a powerful question, and we really need to figure that one out. Catherine, it's great to see you, and we'll have you back soon.
It's great to talk to you.
And we're going
to
get you back to talk about the space report for sure. Thank you, everyone, for joining me. This is Dark Journalist, and remember to join us at darkjournalist.com. Subscribe now. We have some amazing things coming up for subscribers this summer. Thanks again, Catherine.
Bye.